This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today, we're going over four weddings and a funeral. Sexy part six. Seis. Seis. So, if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you may want to pass on this one or catch up because we still have four more episodes after this. Yeah, four more episodes after this.
Huh. Well, really wish I could pass on this one right now.
Oh, we'll catch you next time. Somebody's bitter. Gentle listeners.
Oh, we only were talking for 32 minutes and Corinne forgot to press record. And yep. We did a long intro. Our intro's never that long. It was a super long intro, like more so than usual. And it happened to be the one that she forgot to press record on. Hey, gentle listeners.
Are you ready? Again, are you
for
ready?
For one dry kiss. For one dry
for
kiss.
One dry kiss.
For one dry kiss. I was ready. I was ready half hour ago.
So was I.
No, you weren't. You can't say you were ready if you didn't press record.
I meant to press record. In my heart, I pressed record.
Then your heart was ready, but your hands were not.
No.
All there is to it. Well, it feels trivial now telling my moving story about crying in my car.
Well, I mean, it's still going to be a moving story. They haven't heard it before. It just happened.
Oh, wait.
Yeah, what?
We forgot to do the intro.
You forgot to do the intro, not me.
Oh, my God. I did it perfectly the first time. I did it perfectly on the non-recording. I even said, I'm not going to mess up. And I didn't. I said, welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to rom-coms, movies, and series. I am one of your hosts sitting across from Corinne, who is not appropriate for all listeners herself, Corinne Edding. And I said it flawlessly.
You did. You said it flawlessly once again, but this time with more irritation in your voice. And I said... And I am sitting across with the graphic design genius, otherwise known as Miss Tamara Cosio.
So... I'm just going to jive. I'm going to jive. I'm going to jive with you folks. You fine folks out there. I was telling Corinne last week that I had a funny, touching story that I shared with her via text. And I was like, I'm going to write this like an outline because I want to remember it to say on the podcast on Wednesday, which is today.
Yes.
And it was funny because, as I stated in a previous episode, I have thrown a grenade in my life in more ways than one. Things are complicated. Things are confusing. Things are hard. But, you know, all for the good. One morning I was driving to work feeling a little more despondent than usual. And I was listening to the second half of My Favorite Murder, which is still one of my favorite podcasts. And they have a segment at the very end called, What Are You Even Doing Right Now? So... I was almost to work, about to get off on my exit, and it was a little slow going because I was stuck in traffic. And Karen read one of the responses from, what are you even doing right now? And the gal's like, greetings from New Zealand. What am I even doing right now? I am updating my resume because I had a really toxic job and I quit. And people think I'm crazy because how can you even quit a job, a paying job, in this kind of economy? And the answer is for my mental health, and I will do it over and over and over again until I find my joy. That is what I'm doing right now. And she said it in such a way that I was like touched, and it was kind of similar to situations that I'm going through right now. So I was like bawling. Did I mention that I was more despondent than usual? Bawling in my car. And if anybody knows me in these podcasts and previous stories, I always have napkins or tissues or paper towels or some sort of paper in my car from the many, many, many years I lived in Fresno and had extreme allergies and was basically a living tissue box for 16 years. Always have tissues. But for some insane reason on this day when I was crying my eyes out, my makeup, my eyeliner, my mascara got in my eyes, was stinging the shit out of me. I could not find anything to dab my eyes with except for a crumpled brown, really dusty, really dirty, crushed up napkin that I had probably used to wipe off my dashboard. Oh. So I couldn't use that. My eyes were blurring, like the traffic was slowing. So I was just resigned to flip my glasses up on my forehead and hold my eyes like 2 inches away from the AC vents in an attempt to try to dry them out.
You're such a genius.
was I though? Because I had to like put my head back and forth and back and forth. And finally, like I got some sort of relief and I put my glasses back down and we had come to a complete stop because traffic. And this woman in front of me was looking at through her rearview mirror at me with such concern on her face because I was bawling with black streaks down my face with my nose 2 inches away from the vent, like waving my head back and forth like a crazy person. So we had a moment where I was just like, I looked at her and I started laughing. So I'm like, this must be a sight to behold, but only momentarily because I got off on my exit. By this time, I was like laughing hysterically at the absurdity of it all. And then I was like, you know, I just want to hear that "What are you even doing right now?" section one more time, because it was just so touching and moving to me. And I did. And it was a mistake because I started crying again. All over again. Went through the same thing. Less severe because I cried most of my makeup off, but still the same thing. And I was like, when are you even going to learn, Tamara? Seriously.
Well, I have been in that kind of experience before. After my sister died, I would just be driving to work. That would be my crying time in my car, you know.
My life for tinted windows, am I right? Am I right?
Oh my gosh, yes. Because I'd be like sobbing, I'd be like, and tears would be streaming down my face, and my face would be even redder than it already is. And I would just be like, are these people who I'm in stop and go traffic with, like looking at me with concern in their eyes because they're like, is she okay?
Just keep your eyes forward. You don't need to know. You don't need to know. You'll get to work so much easier if you just tell yourself, no, nobody's paying attention. Nobody sees this. You're invisible.
Yes. And gentle listeners, in case you were wondering, that is episode 441 of My Favorite Murder. And that is 1 hour, 21 minutes, and 38 seconds in.
Thank you, Corinne.
And at the end of that story, I thought it was really cool because she didn't say quite this. She said something a little bit different. The person who wrote in said Wahine Toa, which is female warrior in Maori. And I was like, yes, we could use some female warrior energy. And it also made me think about the haka that was done by the, was it soccer or rugby team in the New Zealand once in the Olympics? The women. And it was, I've never seen a haka done by a group of women. And it was just like the most beautiful, powerful thing.
Wahine Toa. Yes. We all need more Wahine Toa in our lives.
Uh-huh. Amen to that. Well, I've always very much thought of you looking like Wonder Woman and having Wonder Woman energy. And Wonder Woman is a female warrior. So totally, totally fits.
I just had a thought, too, when you were talking about crying in your car. I was like, oh, my life for tinted windows. Or I was like, what if we had Wonder Woman's invisible jet? I'm like, no, that would just be worse because you can see Wonder Woman in all her glory, every single thing, because her jet is invisible, but she's not. So they would just get a fucking clear bird's eye view of you going.
And everything that you're wearing, too. I always thought when we'd watch the Halls of Justice, the superheroes, and they would show Wonder Woman just sitting in the air.
Everybody below her can see if she has a wedgie. That's awful.
Oh my gosh.
Her butt would look so flat because it's sitting on the invisible seat.
I know. It's magic. Fortunately, I don't have that issue because my hiney is so large and grand in proportion. When I'm wearing a dress, my butt is almost never covered by my dress, no matter how long it is when I sit down, because my bootay is like, whoop, no, I'm taking up all this dress fabric. And so I'm always like sticking to chairs and stuff like that. And speaking of dresses, guess what, Tam?
You were going to tell the gentle listeners about how you tried to show two strangers that were ladies your panties.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to talk about. This was originally a fresh story to Tam's ears, but it's not anymore because somebody forgot to press record on their recorder. Not naming any names or pointing any fingers or anything, but
I laughed heartily the first time you told it. I might not this time, not out of any malice, but just because I've heard it before now.
Not only because she's heard it before, but because she's bitter at me because I forgot to press record. One of the cardinal rules of podcasting. She's shaking her head at me with eyes that say, yeah, you dumbass. This just fresh off the presses today happened. I was at Chipotle getting my pre-podcasting Chipotle per huge. And I'm walking out the door and I'm wearing my super cute black dress with the blue straps and the hearts of different colors all over it. And it's super cute. One of like my top two cute dresses. I have other dresses that are quite lovely as well, but not in the top two cute dress range. This is one of the top twos. Anywho, these two women, I don't know if they were partners or if they were friends, but one of them's like, oh my God, your dress is so cute. I was like, thank you. And the other one was like, yeah, but does it have pockets? And I was like, does it have pockets? And I put my hands into my pockets and then I like try and like lift to show how big those pockets are. But really, I almost flashed them, which is great. Fortunately, I'm wearing my cute sushi underwear, but regardless,
Your backside gets plenty of action on those bare office chairs. So you were trying to give your front side like a little air, a little sunshine, a little peekaboo.
But I showed them like how it totally fits my phone, their huge pockets and my keys and everything. And they were impressively impressed. We went our own separate ways. But as one of them was walking through the door, I saw it. I saw that, one, she was wearing Crocs, which, let me tell you, I've held in disdain for a very long time. And two, she was wearing sweaty sweats that said Keith Haring on the side of them. And I very recently bought two different pairs of Crocs because of swimming on Mondays and wanting to have like more covered feet after I got out of the pool.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those pairs of Crocs was Keith Haring Crocs. And I was like, if she doesn't know that there are Keith Haring Crocs, I absolutely have to tell her because obviously.
Mm.
So here are my Keith Haring Crocs. I'm showing Tam.
I saw them the first time, but thank you for the second go round.
Reenactment.
They are very cute, and I do not like Crocs.
Same, but I've never felt like hipper wearing a pair of Crocs. I've never worn Crocs before, but even so, I've never felt hipper wearing a pair of Crocs because those Crocs are just totally badass. Anywho, they come out, they're sitting outside trying to eat their food, and I stalk them.
Not with Corinne around.
No. I actually joked about like inviting myself to eat with them. And they were like, come on, sit and eat. Which I totally would have. Except that I wanted to get close to finishing editing the second edit of the podcast that's coming out on Tuesday. And so I did that instead of making two new friends. But regardless, so then I told her about the Keith Haring Crocs, and she said, yeah, I already know. And I was like, oh, okay.
Bye. Oh.
Yeah. But we still had a good little conversation, and then I left. And then I was like, wait a minute, I have to tell them. And I turned back around because, obviously, I was like, I'm completely embarrassing myself times three, so might as well go for it. And then I had to tell them about the podcast, so I did.
Doing the Lurd's work there, Corinne. Doing the Lurd's work.
I am like the...
We called you the town crier of Disneyland when you were telling people about
the podcast. I know,
but
now I'm like thinking that I'm like the... I can't remember the religion that goes around knocking on the doors.
Jehovah's Witness.
Jehovah's Witness. I am the Jehovah's Witness of podcasting.
Have you heard the good word of ODK?
Yes. Just like making my way through the neighborhoods, through the Chipotles, random people sitting there. I have this podcast. Do you appreciate cussy irreverence, hilarity, bestie energy?
Pressing record. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say that out loud?
Oh!
Where did that come from?
Not that somebody's bitter or anything. Maybe we need to do couples counseling. I don't know. It's fine. It's totally fine. So I shared about the podcast and then I left them alone and I drove home and I edited most of the podcast. So Tam, part of my gift to you, not only was not making two new friends, but also I will be giving you the draft of this upcoming Tuesday's podcast to you either tomorrow or at the absolute latest Friday afternoon, but should be tomorrow.
Oh my God. It's so crazy. The shorter episodes, you just fly through them now. Well, not like fly through them, but Jesus Christ. You get through them so fast.
It's beautiful. It's like I can actually have a life outside of podcasting, which I love podcasting. Don't get me wrong, but there are also other things I'd like to do with my life. So, yes.
Do you know what else I love, Corinne?
What do you love?
I love me? A good, sexy synopsis.
Oh, you know, I hear tell somebody has a good, sexy synopsis that they mainly did. And I was basing it off of the what I was listening to while I was going through the second draft of the episode that I was editing. So here's my synopsis. And then Tam will chime in and be like, oh, my God, I can't believe you forgot this. And I'll be like, ah, sorry. Synopsis are basically going over the relationships of Four Weddings and a Funeral.
ODK.
Yeah.
The relationships right now, not great.
Not great. Not great because somebody forgot to press record.
Trust issues. Some trust issues.
So, last week on Four Weddings and a Funeral, Duffy and Maya are together in love forever.
No. No.
Cashin and Fatima have a kiss tractor beam / kisses interrupt this moment over cannolis. Gemma is mourning the loss of Quentin, but happy that Giles is now going to the school that Duffy is teaching at, Peeth School for Boys, and he's living at home.
Yay!
Yay! Cash confesses to Maya that he has thought about her ever since they first met, saying, "Can't get you out of my mind." He didn't really sing that, but he should have.
Yes. Yep.
Ainsley isn't talking to Craig because he invited Cash to a Love Chalet watch party that she wasn't supposed to be at, but she turned up at and was all full of, curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ainsley thinks she has hit a windfall when she gets a bitter, almost divorced woman looking to exploit a loophole in her divorce settlement and wants a full remodel of her 6-bedroom townhome. I don't know how you can call something a townhome because that sounds like it's small when it's 6 bedrooms, but whatever.
Yeah, seriously. Maybe you have just, it's in the pronunciation. Townhome.
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 There we go, because it's so the big. Echo of all so the big, rooms. Yeah. Nice. I love it. However, when her ex-husband comes to Ainsley's shop and tells her not to cash the check, her windfall is gone. But in a twist of, and I said face, which did not mean that, but fate, he returns and hires Ainsley to do his bachelor pad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Finally, Zara is on Love Chalet, and Craig is convinced that Zara is sending him signals through the television and arranges to go on Love Chalet himself, and he proposes to her and gets turned down. However, in a twist at the very end, when Craig is watching the season finale and Zara's beau Garrett proposes, Craig hears a on the door, and it's Zara, and we're left wondering, what the hell is going on? All of
what
that.
The hell is going on?
On Four Weddings and a Funeral, Part 5. Tamara, will you tell us what the hell is going on?
Mm. Part 6, Part Sexy Sexy 6.
Yes.
This episode is a goddamn roller coaster because at first I was like, oh, well, I can't spoil it, but it's tacky. It's tacky as hell. I'm just going to say that. I'm saying it right at the top. But at first, things are kind of like, oh, you know, things are happening, but not super important. And then you get to the end and like, I literally wrote down several conversations verbatim. So I'm like, oh, this shit's getting deep. Oh, my God. Oh, mm-hmm. My Lord. So, yeah, it's a little bit of a fucking roller coaster ride. And we hit the sharp decline halfway through and ride it all the way to the end. Shall I start?
Yes. Chalet. Chalet start? Yes.
Oh, chalet start. We open with Maya riding in a glass-walled elevator, looking wistfully at the city below. She's dressed to the nines because there's a swanky soiree she's heading to. It's a party in a sparkly bar, and all her friends are there.
Ooh.
On one side, Duffy is speaking to Cash, and both men's faces light up when she walks through the door. Maya gets a panic look when Duffy beckons her over, and she calls out, sorry, Gemma needed to tell me something. Duffy's face falls. Gemma's face falls. All our faces fall because the past 5 episodes have taught us that there's nothing under the sun that would cause Gemma to call Maya over to share anything.
Mm-hmm.
And we're right. Gemma looks at Maya like she's crazy when she saunters over and says, oh, you have lipstick on your teeth. I tell you that, but I wouldn't call you over here for it.
So this poses the question, is Maya avoiding Duffy, Cash, or the stranger that was standing between them making small talk?
Or all of the above.
Wow. Or all of the above. Maya brushes this off and says to Gemma, so, do you know why Craig called us all out here? We soon find out. Craig bursts through the door, hand in hand with a familiar redhead, announcing, guess who's back? Zara! Zara throws up her left hand and adds, and we're getting married! The bar of friends erupts into excited cheers. And congratulations, Zara explains to the well-wishers. I was too hurt to accept Craig's proposal when he asked me on Love Chalet, see episode 5. But after Garrett, her Love Chalet beau, proposed, I realized my heart belonged to someone else. Zara's second best friend, Poppy, who's in the crowd, asks breathlessly, who? The newlywed couple, newly engaged couple.
I know, sorry.
Glare at her incredulously for a few seconds before Poppy gets it and says, oh, Craig!
Jesus Christ. Her friends.
Do we have our next wedding?
Yes, yes, we do.
Finally! Oh, 6 in and we're on number 2.
Zara and Craig further explain to the crowd that they're having the swankiest wedding money can buy because Love Chalet has agreed to pay for it. And it's going to be, wait for it, televised!
Yay!
Zara's friends squeal with excitement. We're going to be famous! And all the couple has to do is agree to have it directed, choreographed, and work a few sponsors into their vows. No biggie.
No big.
A little later, Craig and Zara find Duffy and Maya on the rooftop having a quiet moment. Craig subtly, not subtly, tells Duffy that he's going to be the best man. Even though the network wanted to cast Damon Wayans Jr. as a stand-in, Craig stuck to his guns because he wanted his real bestie to be his bestie man.
And that was a weird casting choice. I'm like, and why Damon Wayans Jr.? Because he looks like he'd be friends with somebody like Craig, or... He's black.
Yeah, too. No, I knew that. Yeah. The black point was a given. I was like, yes, he's black, but then why that specific black man?
Well, because Idris Elba would be showing him up.
No attention would be on Craig if Idris Elba was there.
Yeah, seriously, I'd be like, hi, Idris.
Anyways, Duffy is thrilled and flattered, but Zara has to break a bit of bad news. Sorry, Maya, couldn't have you as a bridesmaid. You're too pretty. It's a Pippa Middleton situation. Maya nods understandably, but Zara points her finger at the two and giggles, but I think you're going to be the star of your own big day really soon.
Ooh.
Maya looks shocked, then dumbfounded, but manages to force out a awkward laugh.
We next see Maya in quiet contemplation, alone at the bar. She's lost in thought when Cash approaches and offers to buy her a drink. She smiles brightly and asks, hey, Muhammad Ali, how's the hand? Referring to the prior night when he protected her and Gemma from a racist duo of douche bros. Cash examines his fist and says, fine, I punched like 6 people on the way here. This causes her to laugh and me to laugh. And emboldened, he tries to guess her drink of choice and is spot on when he chooses vodka soda with a splash of cranberry. Maya scoffs. No, I'd never order that. She searches the bar shelves and adds, I only drink Kahlua and tomato juice.
That sounds fucking disgusting. That is like the two worst things you could possibly put in a glass together. And I've had a pickleback.
Oh, I would totally pickleback. Are you kidding me?
Ah, pseep.
What was that?
You have to drink the pickle juice to get through the like liquor. And it just like you're thankful for the pickle juice shot chaser.
Yes.
And so the Jameson is bleh, because I just don't like shots. And then you drink the pickle juice and the pickle juice is a welcome reprieve from the Jameson, but only slightly so, because then you get the Jameson out of your mouth and then you get pickle juice. And then it's a Jameson pickle juice combination, which is still bad. So it's just remnants of the two that linger in your mouth and stay for quite a while.
It's a gift that keeps on giving.
No, it's not. No, it's probably up there with Kahlua and tomato juice.
Oh my gosh, Kahlua. I would take Jameson and a pickleback any day over Kahlua and tomato juice, because, okay, I love tomato juice.
Uh-huh.
I could totally dig on a Bloody Mary. I think that Kahlua could be just fine because it's like some kind of like coffee
liqueur,
right?
Really good in hot chocolate.
Right. But the two together would make a very angry baby. A very angry baby.
I would liken it to dunking a fucking slice of a margarita pizza in your coffee and then taking a bite.
Mom, yum. Yeah.
It's almost like something those people that have, what, pica, that kind of crave weird things. Like. Mm-hmm. That might sound good to somebody in the world. And if that's you, I am so sorry. We're not judging.
No. I mean, honestly, if you do like Kahlua and tomato juice together, I want to hear from you because I want to know what other combinations of foods you like to put together. I would find it to be very interesting and might even, you know, want to try some of them out of curiosity. But I do not drink alcohol, so the Kahlua tomato juice combination will not be happening in my world. Well, I would take a little drink of it to taste it. But anyways, shockingly, Cash is disbelieving of this combination.
What?
And he challenges her. So if I bought you a drink of that, you'd drink it? She blusters. I drink an entire pitcher.
Oh, God.
I know.
Aftermath of that just sounds awful.
They laugh easily together and Cash tries to bring up the conversation that they started at the hospital, but Maya shuts that shit down. He's relentless, though, and pushes. You know, there's something between us, but you don't want to admit it because you're scared. Maya's expression turns sour as she retorts. I'm scared? That coming from the runaway groom who secretly wants to be an actor? Cash is undeterred by her snark and demands, tell me you don't think about me and I'll leave you alone. Maya hesitates for only a moment before she states flatly, I don't. You should move on.
Ooh, burn. Burn. Somebody better turn up the AC because it's getting hot in that bar.
And somebody's pants are on fire.
Fire, fire, fire. Put it out with some Kahlua and tomato juice, girl, because you're starting to smoke.
I don't think that alcohol is a good thing to throw on fire, just saying.
If it's not like a high proof, I think it's okay. Like tomato juice and Kahlua, I think would put out a fire, but that's neither here nor there. Anyways, Maya turns to leave, but her conscience lets us, the audience, know the truth. It tells us in a voiceover that she thinks about him all the time. He's all she thinks about. She turns her heartfelt thoughts into another letter about her true feelings for Cash, that their love would be too complicated and he'll always be the one that got away. And after she purges her soul, she goes to the same bridge where she tossed Ted McCheaty Pants' letter into the river, but gets caught again by the same policeman who berates her once again for littering.
He must have the River Thames beat.
Okay. What does he do? Does he just stay on the riverbank and make sure nobody tosses in like dead bodies or guns? Wait, there's no guns there. Never mind.
He's a splashologist. He can tell by like how big the splash is what's going into it.
Oh my God. That that's why he sees Maya and he's like, ah, doesn't even have to put his skills to work. Because he sees her literally like trying to throw the letter over there and he stops her and berates her once again for littering. So instead of tossing her heartfelt words into the water, she instead tucks it into her jacket pocket. Scratch that, Duffy's jacket pocket, because he gave it to her earlier in the evening when she was cold. And ooh, you can tell where this is going, can't you? The next day at home, Maya is regaling Ainsley with the details of Craig's engagement party because Ainsley was still too pissed to attend. But they're interrupted by Duffy, who comes in and wants to have a few words with Maya. They take a stroll outside, and Duffy's noticed that Maya's been a little distant. She feigns ignorance, and he reminds her that she basically left him on the street when Cash got punched in the nose, and when Zara joked about them getting married, Maya stopped breathing for 2 whole minutes. Duffy knows that they're great at being friends, and offers that if she's not into them being together, then perhaps they should just go back to that. Maya accuses, "Are you breaking up with me?" And Duffy assures her that he's not, but he wants the relationship to be mutual. And Maya, whew, she only waits a few moments before agreeing that they should just be friends, because even though she gave their relationship a good college try, she knows that her heart is definitely elsewhere.
Really? Her heart is elsewhere? Really?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's about to leap off that bridge into the river.
She's like, no, don't break up with, no. Okay, yeah. I guess if you insist, Duffy.
I know. The words barely got out of his mouth before she's like, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Let's do that. It was so awkward, like trying to see her make it work and then realizing that it's just not going to happen. Like the acting on their parts was superb because I felt that shit.
Yeah, but also it was so interesting too because... Well, I did feel earnestness from Duffy. I wasn't feeling spark on Duffy's end either, honestly. I saw them do another kiss, and I was like, Duffy was just like, he was going in for the kiss, but he wasn't like passionate about the kiss. He was just like, you know, like there wasn't like the force or the intent behind it. It was just like, I'm going to kiss you now. Prepare for the kiss, you know.
Okay, so that could be one of two things. He's either a lukewarm lover, or the fact that he's been in love with Maya for 10 years basically puts him in a comfortable relationship of one. See, so he's been in this relationship in his head for 10 years, which you would think would make him more passionate when they finally get together. But once he drops a load, then maybe he's just like, oh, and now we're going to slide on into us being like together for 10 years because that's how it's been in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's just something about whether you have known a person forever or you have just met them, when you first get jiggy with them, there's like physical excitement there that happens and physical connection there that happens. And that's just not a happening. Regardless, they're over now. And that is not something that they ever revisit, basically. So.
So let's never speak of it again then.
Yeah. Great. The next day we see Zara and Craig, aka Zrag, deep in party planning mode at Craig's office. They are at max capacity for their wedding of 300 guests and need to shave some people off. Craig seems moody. Zara at first thinks it's because his entire half of the wedding party, we use the term half loosely.
Yeah, I know. I couldn't think of another better word for it. Portion, part, section, percentage.
Will consist of 30 people of the 300 people. So a hefty 10%.
I would be inviting people left and right. I'd be like, no. This, especially if it's going to be televised, I am padding that guest list.
You're like going up to bowling alley patrons and being like, hey.
Oh, no. No, that's who I would not be going up to.
After some digging, Zara gets to the real problem. Craig wants a couple of people to be there for their nuptials and knows that they won't. He's pretty sure Ainsley won't be coming, but he's also mourning the fact that his daughter Molly won't be attending because he's not allowed to be involved in her life at this moment in time due to a contract he signed. Oops. Zara offers brightly,
Well, hopefully in 10 years, you'll have a relationship and you can be there for her wedding. Craig's face sours and he argues, she's 5 years old. To which Zara deadpans, yeah, but she doesn't have a dad. This lighthearted shade makes Craig chuckle and he's smiling when Cash walks in. Craig tells his friend, good news, man. Ainsley's not coming, so you can bring a plus one. Cash apologizes because he knows he's the main reason Ainsley's not going, and tentatively asks, would it be too much to ask for a plus three? You see, my date and I need chaperones. Zara immediately declines because they're at capacity, but Craig argues, your hairdresser's hairdresser is coming. He turns to Cash. It's fine, and gives him a bro bump on the shoulder.
Hairdresser's hairdresser. What the fuck? Oh, see, that's where I would pad my wedding guest list. Because if she's bringing her hairdresser's hairdresser and be like, okay, woo, all the cool people I've ever met in my entire life are going to come to this wedding. Who's it going to be?
Me.
Even
me?
If we only remotely. Yes, you, of course. See, like, I would find that really cool girl that we met at Obsessed Fest named Erica that we spent a few moments with and be like, hey, Erica, I don't know if you remember us, but we were at Obsessed Fest together and we really hit it off. Girl, I am having a wedding that is televised and I think you would be the perfect person to be there. Take that, Zara's hairdresser's hairdresser.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then Kayla.
Yeah.
Our author friend. She's written a book. Mm-hmm. She's very interesting. She's great at parties. She's going to be there too. Suck it, Zara.
And her husband, who also has written movies. So there you
go.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We know people. Uh-huh. And other people. Yeah.
Do we see them regularly? No. Would we invite them to a wedding that was televised because we need 300 people? Absolutely.
100%.
300%.
Yeah! That was the lamest yeah I've ever heard. That night, Maya is rehashing her breakup with Duffy to Ainsley. She points out that he's such a nice guy. He even broke up with me nicely. Ainsley thinks there's another man, but Maya assures her there's not. And possibly as a deflection, asks her if she's thinking about jumping back into the dating pool. But Ainsley states, I'm over men, and it would have to be a hot piece of ass, like better than a shirtless Hemsworth, to pique my interest. I'll take a shirtless Hemsworth, thank you. I'll take a Hemsworth with a shirt on. Meanwhile, across town, Bashir is encouraging Cash not to give up on his acting dreams. He tells his friend, Cash, this is a side hustle economy. I own a cell phone shop, DJ, and sell these dope bracelets on Etsy. 100% rat leather in it. You can act.
What the fuck is rat leather? Is it literally made from rats?
Mm-hmm. Oh. Leather made from rats, yes.
Okay, that's what I was afraid of. Yeah. Please continue.
Sorry, Bashir, we're not interested.
No, even if it's trending on whatever the fuck it's trending on, I'd be like, no, thank you.
No.
Let's not make leather out of random animals, shall we?
Yeah, no. Cash argues that he has to work now, which interferes with casting calls because he has to support his father and little brother. But sweet, sweet Bashir gets a banner idea. He leads Cash to a poster advertising a children's production of The Sound of Music. Cash is livid. He wants a proper acting gig, but Bashir reminds him that everyone has to start somewhere. Cardi B and Channing Tatum were strippers before they made it big. Wait, should you strip?
Bashir.
However, before Cash gets the chance to shut that shit down, they are approached by a petite woman named Miss Ollie, who recognizes Cash immediately. She was the director of the community theater when Cash and Bash were kids and remembers Cash, but not Bashir, because he was such a good little actor. Bashir asks, is there a part for Cash in the children's play? She excitedly says, yeah, we need a Captain Von Trapp, because if you don't do it, not only will I have to direct, I'll also have to don a fake mustache to play the part. Cash surprises himself by agreeing. Good move, Cash. Good move.
Yes. A few nights later, at Ainsley's house, Duffy shows up at her door. Ainsley's surprised to see him because he's missed the last few game nights, but understands that he's avoiding Maya. Luckily, she's at work at that moment, so they're alone. Duffy's relieved by this, but also he's on a mission. He needs his jacket back that Maya borrowed weeks ago. Ainsley obliges, and as she's rifling through Maya's closet, Duffy explains, "You know, I'm getting the blazer back because I'm going to a rehearsal dinner that's happening this weekend with a guy whose name rhymes with egg." Ainsley snaps, "I know it's Craig's wedding this weekend," and goes back to rifling, leaving Duffy to plead at her back. "Come on, Ains, you can't miss Craig's wedding. He's the guy who pretended to be Beyonce's backup dancer to get you backstage. And you're only going to be able to see it once. Well, unless you watch it on TV or stream it on the Love Chalet app." Ainsley finally finds the coat and flings it at Duffy and tells him, "Just take it and go." Duffy obliges, and not surprisingly, shocker, who saw this coming? On the cab ride home, he discovers Maya's letter and reads it. Ooh. And instead of being pissed and heartbroken, he's elated because Maya didn't address the letter to anyone, and Duffy thinks that this is proof that she's still in love with him.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Duffy. Dance, dance, Duffy.
Duffy, Duffy, Duffy. Just make everything about you, Duffy. Why don't you? It's great. This is just great. The next day during Craig's tux fitting, Duffy is reading him the letter aloud. "I wish I could have told you how I really felt. Of course I still have feelings for you, but I didn't want to risk jeopardizing one of the most important friendships of my life. I write this letter knowing I will never send it, but needing to admit the truth, even if it's just to myself. You will always be the one that got away." And his buddy, understandably dubious, asks, "Are you sure it's for you? It's not addressed, dear Duffy." Duffy responds, "It's poetic rumination. Don't you get anything? It's not addressed, dear anyone, but this proves that she still loves me and is afraid of how strong her feelings are. The poor thing. has just been hanging around all sad, wearing my jacket and writing these letters."
Let's analyze this for a second, Duffy. If this was actually the case, why the fuck wouldn't she just stay with you then?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Seriously.
I like how he creates this fantasy of her being like, "Oh, by myself."
Yeah. And he's like, "Duffy, to the rescue, bum ba da da. I know you're in love with me, little lady. Let me just put that heartache to rest and let you love on me some more."
Yeah. Oh, man. Craig asks, "Remind me why you broke up with her?" Oh, sorry. I forgot the most important part of his line. "This proves how awesome and amazing I am."
Duffy, the president of his own fan club.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we should all be the presidents of our own fan club, honestly. However, I feel like he has a lot more self-importance than he really should.
Yeah. It would be a lot easier for some more than others, and you're surprised at how easily Duffy falls into that.
Yeah, yeah. Craig asks, "Remind me why you broke up with her?" Duffy responds, "I broke up with her because I was afraid she'd break up with me first." Craig nods knowingly. The old quit before you're fired routine. We've all done it. Craig encourages him to talk to Maya, but Duffy reiterates the part of the letter where she stated she was never going to tell him. He doesn't know how to approach the topic. Craig encourages him. "When it comes to love, go big or go home," aka show up to Love Chalet shirtless and in your boxer briefs confessing everything.
Yeah. Or with the boombox playing the Say Anything song in your... Oh, wait, you already did that. Never mind.
Yeah, yeah. You tried. You tried. You missed. You failed. That moment passed. Meanwhile, in Hounslow, Cash finally succumbed to the pressure of his father and the imam and had a meet and greet with Fatima's parents. The introductions go well. Haroon and Fatima's rents hit it off famously. And after the visit concludes, Haroon tells his son that Fatima comes from a good family and they are a great match. His little brother Asif is close by and asks, "So, what's next?" And Cash gets a faraway look in his eyes because he knows the next things that is expected is they get married.
Jesus Christ, man. Those arranged marriages move fast, real, real fast. No speed bumps on that road, shit. Then, the event all of Britain's been waiting for. Craig and Zara Zreg's wedding. We get an aerial shot of a posh castle that apparently the queen has frequented. Ooh. There are spotlights casting pink cursive C and Z initials on the front of the building. There is a neon heart-shaped walkway over a red carpet that's filled with paparazzi trying to catch all the partygoers as they arrive. It is tacky as hell.
And I will say the heart walkway, that's iconic Love Island business as well. There are giant hearts for them to walk into the villa. And so, of course,
that makes way more sense.
Giant hearts for them to walk into the castle to get married too. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I was watching it and Larry walked in the living room and was like, are they at prom? And I was like, whoa. I can see why you would think that. Yeah. Yes, this looks like something that a bunch of tweens should be at in the 90s. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Craig shows up with Duffy and they both marvel at the spectacle. And then I put something about the 90s prom instead of a wedding. Good job, Tamara, for for ruining your own punchline, damn it.
Oh, I do that all the time.
But this is Zara and Craig's style. Bold, loud, and bright. All that's missing are some tic-tac-toe decorations, light-up dice, and some animal print.
Yes.
Maya shows up a little while later and gets her invitation scanned because the guest list is very exclusive. She catches Duffy on his way out and they greet each other warmly. Maya says, I feel like I haven't seen you in forever. And Duffy gets hearts in his eyes and apologizes for that. But he can't stay, explaining that he has to go home real quick. Maya smiles and asks, did you forget the rings? And she must know her bestie because he nods, confirming, I forgot the rings. But before he hurries off, he lets her get a good gander of him in his suit and tie. Mm. He's dressed to the nines, too, because he's the best man after all. Maya exclaims, oh, I love that. And Duffy looks at her softly and says, I know. A look flashes across her face that reads, what the fuck does that mean? But Duffy is off before she can say anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. You know, here's the thing. If I saw this when I was in my 20s or earlier, I would see Duffy and I'd be like, oh, he's so misunderstood. Oh, he's got such a beautiful heart. And like, I look at him now in my 40s and I'm like, pathetic, Duffy. You're pathetic. And it's not because I have a problem with like a sensitive guy. I'm all for a sensitive guy. He is pathetic. So, just so many levels. And I'm just like, no, do not go into that dark night. Maya, me, anyone. No.
Don't sugarcoat it. Corinne, tell us how you really feel. Well, pathetic, you know. Pathetic, pathetic.
Pathetic. Gentle listeners, he's a fictional character. So, you know. We're not talking shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. If he was a real person, I would be kinder about the whole situation. But he's fictitious, so pathetic. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, he reads incel to me for the most part, like, oh, practically.
Oh, wow. That's worse than pathetic. Oh, Lord.
Well, because he's just like, why doesn't anybody love me? And then he's like, oh, the ladies love me, but, you know, I mean, it's just, yeah, it's, anyways. Meanwhile, across town, we see Ainsley and Tony too putting up wallpaper in a very nice condominium. Very cute wallpaper too. It's diamonds, different colors, diamond shapes.
Very retro.
Yeah, very retro. I love a good retro wallpaper, and I have been currently obsessively looking at removable wallpaper swatches, and yes, I have sent myself a whole slew of links to figure out what I'm going to do with it. And I'm hoping if Tam comes up and visits me.
I fucking knew it.
What? No, in the near future.
Uh-huh. Help me put up wallpaper.
No, not help me put up wallpaper. Nuh-uh. Help me to figure out which colors, because I found this one site from watching a reality show that has, like, you can adjust the color combinations on the wallpaper. Mm-hmm. So, like, figure out, like, which color combinations and, like, which patterns would be the best for the fun part, not the putting up wallpaper part. Yeah.
And then since you're here, just kidding.
No. Just let me use your artistic brain. That's all. Use you and abuse you for your artistic talents.
You've seen my color choices in my room, right?
Yeah, I have. I have. I have parameters on my color choices. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Meanwhile, across town, we see Ainsley and Tony too. Okay. Wait. No, we've already been there. Ainsley chastises her assistant for not lining up the pattern, but he balks. I don't even know why we're doing this on a Saturday night. You know, in my culture, Saturday night is a very important party night. But Ainsley will hear none of it. They have a job to do and they will finish it. Or at least try, because when Bryce, a.k.a. Tony 3, we find out his name, Bryce. He does not look like a Bryce, but that's beside the point.
Bryce, which rhymes with Tony Thrice, as in Tony 3.
Tony Thrice, yes! Mm-hmm. Walks in to admire their handiwork. He says, I thought you'd have better things to do on a Saturday night. Tony 2 looks at his boss pointedly before she says, okay, fine, you can go. Her assistant whips off his painting coveralls to reveal skinny black jeans and a gold sequined jacket. He was ready to go. And he hightails it out of there, leaving Bryce, Tony Thrice, and Ainsley alone. Oh, and can I say Ainsley looks fan-fucking-tastic in that painter's jumper.
Mm-hmm. She's stylish even in work gear.
Mm-hmm. Back at the wedding, it's cocktail hour, and we see Maya alone at the bar. Once again, ordering a vodka soda with a splash of cranberry. What? Not Kahlua and tomato juice?
Oh my god, shocking.
Cash was right about her drink choice. Honestly, it's a solid drink choice. Vodka with a splash of cranberry? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And some sparkly soda.
J'approuve. Totally j'approuve. She is approached by a handsome young man who asks, Oi, how do I know you? Were you on the show Wet Date? Maya smiles at the clueless but very attractive young man because he doesn't remember that they met at Craig and Zara's engagement party, which was interesting seeing that he's Garrett, the one who proposed to Zara on the show Love Chalet. But she, of course, turned him down. Garrett seems to have made a full recovery because it's obvious that he's hitting on Maya and announces, I don't know if you've read the recent tabloids, but I have recently recovered from a bout of bronzer poisoning. Maya says, good for you, smiles awkwardly, and tries to make a hasty exit.
Wow, bronzer poisoning.
Just go whole hog on that.
Maya runs into Cash on the dance floor. Or dare I say it, walks straight towards him. They greet each other and Cash informs her that he got a part in a play. She is thrilled for him that he's finally pursuing his dreams, but he tampers her expectations by adding, oh, it's just community theater and I think I'm the only one old enough to drink, so the cast party's probably going to be really bad. Maya chuckles, but is still encouraging because he's making stuff happen. And he tells her, I really have you to thank for that. It winds up, I needed a swift kick in the ass, and you called me on my shit. Just then, they're met by Fatima, Nani, and Bashir. Fatima exclaims, oh my gosh, this wedding is bonkers. There's an ice sculpture of a cupid pointing his arrow at another ice sculpture of Zara and Craig, and they're all naked. Maya introduces herself to Fatima and asks, are you here with Bashir? She laughs and corrects her, no, actually, I'm here with Cash. Bashir adds, and we're all the chaperones, you know, following the rules of an engaged marriage and all. Maya's face falls at this bit of news, and Cash gives her an apologetic smile. Bashir asks Maya where her date is, and she quietly informs him that she's there solo. Nani looks up at Bashir and says in Urdu, how sad she's here alone. Even I have a date. Before she chuckles and high-fives her fellow chaperone, while Fatima gives her grandmother a look that says, behave.
And Maya looks fucking amazing. Her hair is like in this kind of like mohawk-ish kind of thing. And then she's got these cool glittery pins on the side. It looks so good.
The only thing I don't like is the back of her dress because the back of her dress looks like a different dress than the front of her dress. It's like the front of her dress is one color and the back of her dress are like leather straps with like sparkles on them. And I'm like, that doesn't look like the same article of clothing.
Maybe it's, you know how some people, like, they paint, like, one half their face one way and another half. So maybe this is, like, the front, and then the back, she turns over her shoulder, and she has a different look, you know?
She's like, the front's for Cash, the back's for Duffy. The front's for Cash, the back's for Duffy. So she can talk to Cash and then not have to face her friend because he won't recognize her because it's like a different dress.
It's perfect. It's perfect. Subterfuge at its finest. Finally, we get to the nuptials. Zara looks beautiful in her wedding gown, and their venue, in contrast, looks tacky as hell. I don't know. I kind of liked portions of it. There was like all these like balloons that were on the ceiling. There were colored lights above it, so they like would change color and shit. And
the balloons on the ceiling were awesome. Those I had no problem with, which is why I did not mention them at all. But it was like their colors were hot pink and gold. Okay, just let that sink in. Hot pink and gold.
Nothing says wedding romance like hot pink and gold.
Mm-hmm.
There is a hot pink runner going towards Craig. Just like carpet runner going towards Craig, not actual person running in hot pink. Craig is standing in front of two hot pink thrones, and they're flanked on all sides by gold lame. The bridesmaids trail behind Zara as she makes her way down the aisle, both donning hot pink sequined bridesmaid gowns and matching hot pink feather boas, because nothing says romance and class like feather boas, right? Right?
Mm-hmm. It's like a six-year-old decided what their wedding's going to look like, and this was it.
So when you get married, what color is the feather boa that I get to wear, Tam?
Lime green.
Thank you. That's going to look great with my complexion.
Yeah. Well, not your dress isn't going to be lime green. Your dress is going to be purple. It's just the boa's lime green.
Oh, okay. Okay. Nice accent color. It still will be the closest thing to my face. So I'm just going to let you know I'm going to look less pink and more kind of gray. Just.
Okay.
You know. Yeah.
Well, you can't outshine me. So that works out really well.
Perfect. Perfect. The executive director of a nonprofit that I used to work for, her sister had a wedding that was like a fancy wedding. And the bridesmaids all had to wear candy cane striped dresses that had like hoops in them with candy cane stripe parasols.
Okay. Was she marrying Willy Wonka or something?
I was just like, that is going a bridge too far in trying to be like, no, I'm the beautiful one.
Yeah. Yeah. I keep saying that I'm only going to see the weddings tacky once, but I keep peppering out. It's tacky. It's tacky. I'm not going to say tacky again. It's tacky. Did I mention it's tacky?
What's another word for tacky? Tacky. Tacky as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Tacky as hell. Tacky as all get out.
Tucka, 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 tucka. Tucka, 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 tucka,
tucky. Ticky, 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 tacky.
That's like shots fired, how tacky it is.
But we add extra, like, I don't know, whipped cream, gravy onto the tacky fest, tacky tacky, that is happening here because, as Tamara says, it looks like a bad 80s party puked all over the ceremony. And if that wasn't bad enough, at the very end of Zara's super long wedding dress train, super long wedding dress train, like, I don't know, 20 feet long wedding dress train. I mean, it was bananas long.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the reason why it was so long was because she wanted a lot of separation between her and the giant square of a Hotels.com advertisement that's at the end of the train.
Oh. Mm. Nothing says good weddings like sponsorship.
Right. And, you know, there's like a certain genius to this, because this way the show Four Weddings and a Funeral can overtly put a sponsorship in the show, but as a sponsorship for a show within the show. So it's it's not as overt of a sponsorship because it's supposed to be a sponsorship within a sponsorship. It's like the nesting doll of sponsorships going on right here.
Indeed.
And it's Hotels.com, which we get to have full-on advertisement for in the various approaching things. So when she gets to the end of the aisle, Zara jumps right into their vows and says,
Craig, every moment with you is a gift that I get to unwrap. And when I do, oh, look, there's another gift. What I'm trying to say is you are my everything.
She starts getting emotional and her eyes tear up slightly when we hear a brisk voice off camera saying,
what? What does the voice say? Does it ask if anyone objects? Is it someone trying to object? Stop the wedding!
I'm just like getting visions of Dustin Hoffman in The Graduate.
Mm.
Is it fucking Garrett being like, come on, love. I know you. I'm the one you really want. I've recovered from the bronzer poisoning.
Is it Tamara saying, just put your eyes next to the AC vent and you'll be fine?
Hashtag pro tip. I like it. Find out with us after the break. And we're back. The voice belonged to a burly looking no-nonsense man who says, cut! The attendees all groan. He's the reality wedding director who rushes forward and informs the couple, Zara, dear, your makeup is ruining the shot. And make sure you work in that hotels.com has their promotional buy 10 nights, get one free into your nuptials, which they obviously had as part of their contract for the advertisement for this episode of Four Weddings and a Funeral. And they figured out a way to work it in without totally ruining the script. Then they fall back into place and attempt their vows. Take two.
Would you let a corporate sponsor fund your wedding if you had to do something similar to Craig and Zara?
You mean if I had to have a televised wedding?
Televised wedding, you have to have logos at various stations and somebody is there to facilitate and make sure things look good.
I mean, I wouldn't do that. No, but if I were in a situation where for some godforsaken reason I had to have a televised wedding, I don't know why I would have to have a televised wedding, but I had to have a televised wedding and I had to have sponsors, I would just be like, if y'all are gonna make me do this, I want fucking awesome sponsors. Thank you very much. Mm. Give me the best. I will wear a Yeti wedding gown. I will...
A Yeti wedding gown?
Yeah, Lizzo's line.
Oh, gotcha.
I'm like, I will give me the fanciest, most delicious wedding cake and we'll put that person's name like all over the place around it. I'll have a cutout fucking poster of that business or the person right next to the wedding cake. I do not care, but I just want deliciousness in my mouth. What about you?
That sounds nasty. I just want deliciousness. And wait till the honeymoon, Corinne. Wait till the honeymoon.
That's not deliciousness in my mouth.
Fuck yeah, I would. If they're going to sponsor the wedding and it's a big ass bash like this one, I would do it wholeheartedly and just laugh about it and be like, this is my fucking wedding and they're paying for it. So if you don't like it, I don't care.
Okay, but like this wedding has hotels.com as a sponsor. Now, you would think that that would be cool, but and we'll get to this. I'm not going to spoiler it, but it ends up being like a monkey's paw of a sponsorship.
But it's not hotels.com's fault per se, but we'll get into it.
Yes, we are going to get into that.
Back at Bryce, a.k.a. Tony Thrice's condo, he's encouraging Ainsley to finish the job next week, but she's relentless. There's a task that needs to be done, and she needs a distraction. She tells her client, I have nowhere to go. All of my friends are at Craig's wedding right now. Bryce is surprised and asks, Craig and Zara's wedding is tonight? Okay, if I record this series, will I get that? Or is that a separate special? Because he's a fan.
Asking the hard-hitting questions, I appreciate that.
And Ainsley does not know. Or actually, she pours wallpaper paste into a bucket and says, don't know, don't care. But Bryce doesn't believe it because that's all she's been talking about for the past couple of weeks. Ainsley realizes this, but attributes it to the fact that her best friend stabbed her in the back. Bryce says, bullshit. You're not mad because your friend hung out with your ex. If that was the case, you would have been over it a long time ago. You're mad because he's getting the wedding you never had.
Woo, truth hurts.
Ainsley denies this and says, no, that is so superficial. If that was true, I would be a selfish, terrible person. Bryce nods knowingly, adding, I know about selfish. I sunk the boat I named after my wife, and now I have to fish off the dock. Ainsley asks quietly, do you think I should have gone? And he shrugs. Well, if you care about somebody, you show up for them. Ainsley contemplates this for a second, and Bryce reminds her that her boat ain't sunk yet. So, ...
After the ceremony, Maya finds her table at the reception and is surprised to see that she is seated next to Gemma, who complains loudly when she sees her BFF stealer, a.k.a. Nemesis.
This is what my life is relegated to? Now the singles table?
Maya looks around and realizes they are both seated at the singles table, full of lady partygoers, all flying solo. Maya observes, I've been at the black table, the American table, but never the spinster table.
Spinster, Tamara's favorite word. She likes to call me a spinster, and I don't like it. The end.
Oh, Jesus. Do I like calling you a spinster? No.
You literally called
true?
Me a spinster.
Yes. I'm just kidding.
No!
Oh my God, your face is getting so red.
Gemma snaps like I do. I beg your pardon. I'm a widow.
Maya apologizes profusely, realizing how hard this must be for Gemma, attending the wedding without Quentin. Gemma excuses herself to sneak a ciggy outside and finds Duffy rehearsing his best man speech. She hears a bit of it where he requests Maya to join him at the front of the room. Yes, let's make this not about the couple. Let's make this about a romantic gesture, ? That has nothing to do with the couple that's getting married at all, Duffy?
That's a faux pas. That is a big faux pas. If you're at a wedding or an engagement party or something, don't fucking propose to somebody else there. Give those people their moment. You go get your own.
Uh-huh. And if you are going to propose to somebody else, you don't make a public spectacle out of it. You, like, draw them off to the side. You propose to them. You keep it on the hush-hush just because it's, like, a beautiful, magical moment somewhere special for yourselves. And then you go about it. But, like, no. No.
I think you leave the proposal completely out of it. I would disagree with you, Corinne. There's a place and time, and at somebody else's nuptials or celebration or ceremony of love, don't do it. Just after, before, the next day, especially if it's a destination wedding. Well, we're in Hawaii. Guess what? Yeah. How long are you in Hawaii? Not the 8 hours you're going to be at that ceremony, so just wait.
And wait until after everything, not before the thing.
Yeah, because then your significant other is probably going to be like, especially women, look at my ring! Oh, look at my ring! Not all women, but some women, look at my ring! We got engaged! Oh, wait. I'm sorry. Did you say if anybody has any objections? I didn't hear that because I was too busy screaming about my ring. No. I don't have any objections. I just wanted everybody to see this rock right here on my finger.
Look at this engagement party that's being thrown for me! Wait, oh, this is not my engagement. Oh, this is the reception. I think this is my engagement party, too. We can just share, right?
No. Even worse, it'd be like, you know what? I'm going to be doing different at my engagement parties. Okay, those appetizers are nasty. I am not having those. That color does not look good on that girl. She's going to be one of my bridesmaids, too, honey. We're going to go for like a lemon yellow. And then it is just too hot out here. Like, does anybody know about indoor weddings? And just like everybody's looking at the newly engaged couple with hatred in their eyes. Because that's not what you do.
So, I'm very glad that Gemma has run into fucking Duffy, who's being pathetic. I said it. Just like Tam is like, tacky wedding. I'm like, pathetic Duffy, mm-hmm. pathetic Duffy. So, Gemma asks, exactly what is your speech about? It can't be any worse than the maid of honors. Hers is just a dirty limerick. Duffy explains that his speech is more than just a speech. Just stop there. He's going to profess his love to Maya. No, you don't do that for your speech. Gemma immediately urges him not to, causing Duffy to throw up his hands and ask, why doesn't anyone think I deserve love?
Because of moments like this, Duffy.
Seriously, this is not about you, Duffy. At this time, it's about Craig and Zara. Excuse me, Zreg. This is about Zreg. He produces the letter from his pocket as proof that Maya still has feelings for him, and Gemma snatches it away. After perusing it for a moment, she says, sorry, Duffy, but I don't think this is about you.
She said she dreams about running her hands through his dark hair, and yours is dirty blonde at best. She also says things would be too complicated. How is it complicated? You guys are best friends that dated for like 5 seconds and separated. Amicably. Sorry, Duffy. I think you're seeing what you want to see. Duffy is undeterred, because who else would Maya be writing a love letter about? Huh? It's all about him.
Nobody's as good as Duffy.
Right. Nobody else can write a stunning 1,400-page book about the decline of the fishing
cod industry. Over four family generations in a New England town. Doesn't that sound riveting? No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
Back inside the venue, Craig and Czar are using a huge saber to cut their 7-foot light-up wedding cake, and that is just as horrendous as it sounds.
It sounds pretty amazing to me.
So Corinne would be the newly engaged girl at the fucking party going, that's me, I'm going to get that light-up cake has Corinne's name all over it, as hotels.com.
Excuse me taking pictures of my cat. I just need this for documentation for what I want.
I know. I'm sorry, can I just stop you for a real quick second? I know you're cutting your cake, but I just want to take some quick measurements before this thing gets like all pieced out.
Oh, and by the way, have you heard about my podcast?
Oh, gosh. Then the Love Chalet host, Laura Whitmore, announces that Craig and Czar will be performing their first dance, sponsored by Hotels.com, and asks the DJ, who is Captain Obvious from the Hotels.com commercials, to hit it. And the DJ does. The music starts, and whereas a few weeks ago Craig and Czar were practically falling all over each other during their dance rehearsals, and not in a good way, now they're borderline ballroom dancing champions. The bride and groom dip, kick, and seamlessly glide in front of their cheering and adoring guests. But curiously, the camera always stays just a bit above them, so we can't see their faces. The music stops, and we see why. The real Craig and Czar are hiding behind a nearby wall. The couple on the floor are their dancing doubles, and they glide out of sight, replaced by the real newlyweds. And it's obvious that the guests were instructed to play along, because when the choreographed routine is done, nobody acts surprised when Craig and Czar bow and take credit.
Yeah, but they really needed the dancing doubles if they were going to do...
Oh, no, they did.
Yeah, they were terrible.
They were awful. They were bad, 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 bad. I didn't mention it before because I'm like, let's just forget this ever happened. Oh, no, we can't, because there's going to be dancing at the wedding. Shit. Then the dance floor is open to all, but Cash, Fatima, and Nani are all seated at their table. Bashir wanders over with a plate of cake and Nancy. Boy, I always thought if I got married, I'd have a Sunday bar, but this cake has changed my mind. Fatima looks at him confused, and Cash is too busy searching the dance floor for Maya. But Fatima tells Bashir, what do you mean, if? You're like the most eligible bachelor in Hounslow. Bashir smiles good-naturedly and says, you just butter me up because you want a piece of my cake. Cash excuses himself, leaving the chaperones and Fatima at the table alone.
Fatima doesn't seem disappointed by his absence and is bopping along to the music. Nani pokes Bashir and says in Urdu, what's wrong with you? Ask Fatima to dance. Bashir looks over at her and mutters, isn't that against the rules? To which Nani pretends to be asleep. She like literally drops her head and is like. Because what she doesn't know won't hurt her. Bashir gets her drift and asks Fatima shyly, I don't suppose you'd want to dance with me. Fatima's face lights up and she says, absolutely, I'd love to dance with you. They make their way onto the floor and a soft rendition of Dusty Springfield's I Only Want to Be With You plays around them. I don't know what it is that makes me love you so. I only know I never want to let you go. Cause you started something, no, can't you see? That ever since we met, you've had a hold on me. Which I feel like this song is really more like Cash and Maya's love song. Because she says, I don't know what it is that makes me love you. I only know I never want to let you go because you started something. Oh, can't you see that ever since we met, you've had a hold on me. Like, they met at the airport, and since then, they can't get them out of their mind. It happens to be true. I only want to be with you. Fatima gasps. I absolutely love this song. Bashir takes her hand and answers, you sang this at your year-end talent contest, right? Fatima is taken aback. How did you know that? Bashir smiles. Your nanny told me. She also said you were beaten by Shireena Patel because she was doing some provocative dance to Genie in the Bottle. Fatima giggles, surprised, and asks, what else did she tell you about me? Bashir reluctantly answers, she also told me that you got caught smoking a cheeky cigarette behind the school. You were a rebel. She smiles nostalgically and reminds him, well, I'm a proper adult now with a pension and all, but sometimes I wonder if I've grown up to be a bit of a bore. Bashir looks at her as if she's crazy, then spins her around, causing her to laugh while he says, you speak four languages, you love cheesy horror movies, and you dominate at darts. Real talk, you're one of the sickest people I know. Things are getting a bit serious as they sway to the music before he asks, can we just two-step? Because I don't like... But he doesn't have to finish because she knows what he means, and they immediately break away and are doing their own Bashir and Fatima's special version of slow dancing, which looks a bit more like Poppin' and Lockin' from the 80s. Barbie dancing.
I was going to say, I'm sure there's probably a better definition of that that's less than 30 years old in reference, but I didn't know what it was. There's got to be some other name for Poppin' and Lockin'. If you know, gentle listeners, please write in. Enlighten us, because we need it. We're stuck in the 80s, much like this wedding. Anywho. Cash seeks out Maya amongst the partygoers because he's got some splaining to do.
Or as Sam says, he's got some spraining to do.
Spraining, yeah. Whoops. Yep, he's going to knock her in the knee with a bottle of champagne. Maya's upset because he admitted to being with Fatima for 3 months, and Maya can do math, and accuses, so when you said you were thinking about me in the hospital, you were with her? Cash admits, yes, but we'd only begun seeing each other. Maya presses on, and at the engagement party, when you said there was something between us? Cash interjects, because there is something between us, and Fatima and I only got serious because you shut me down. You said you didn't have feelings for me. Maya's emotional fountain runneth over, and she blurts out, of course I have feelings for you. I have since we first met. Cash looks surprised by this bit of information and asks quietly, then why didn't you say anything? Maya should have said, duh, but she's a better person than me. So she explains, I can't be the girl who keeps going for the wrong guy. My married boss, my best friend's ex. I don't want to be the person who hurts others just to get what she wants. Cash breathes, I don't want that either, but every time I see you, he trails off, and she nods slightly because she knows. Their bodies slowly move closer to each other, and the KISS tractor beam is on full blast, and it looks like for a few seconds they're going to smooch in the middle of everyone, reception be damned, but they remember themselves and they don't.
Their conversation is interrupted by Love Chalet hostess Laura Whitmore announcing that it's time for the speeches. Craig and Zara sit on their wedding thrones while Laura divulges the location chosen by the wedding viewers at home, who voted for a fun-filled 10 days in Antarctica. That's why did they give Antarctica as a location? Because Mindy Kaling. Because I am like, do not monkeys paw me with my hotels.com thing. If I'm going to have a fucking hotels.com billboard on my fucking wedding train, you better fucking like give me some wonderful dream vacation in somewhere that's like lovely and I don't need to wear 50 billion layers of clothes. Unless I'm seeing the Northern Lights and that's not Antarctica, that would be Iceland. Thank you. Ah. Mm. Antarctica is not in the north. It's in the south. It's like the southest south.
I still would monkey's paw be down because I just want somebody to spend $20,000 on a wedding that I wouldn't do myself. And I just might veto that Antarctica trip and be like, oh, I'm sick. Jesus. Oh, shucks. Couldn't make it. Darn.
Zara has a hard time not showing how pissed she is. She actually looks quite pissed at the announcement, as her catty bridesmaids cackle at their luck. But it's short-lived because Duffy gets called up for his best man speech. He grabs the mic and gets a few words in about... Okay, now, this also... Okay, this also pisses me off because...
Something Duffy says pisses you off? Shocking.
I know. Okay. So he grabs the mic and gets a few words in about friends falling in love when there's a shout from the back of the room. Wait! It's Ainsley. She's still wearing her painting coveralls, looking fucking cute slash hot as hell.
Even though she's splattered with paint from wallpapering all day.
And she apologized profusely before tearing the microphone away from her friend and smiling at Craig. And thank goodness she basically rescues Duffy from making a fatal mistake. So.
Yep. Yep.
She informs the crowd, I'm Ainsley, one of Craig's best friends, and I wasn't planning on coming tonight, obviously, but I need to say something. A few months ago, I was supposed to have a wedding like this. Well, maybe not the naked ice sculptures and the prolific use of giant self-portraits, but the point is my wedding didn't happen, and I was afraid if I came here tonight, I'd have to relive that. But then someone told me I have to show up for those I care about, and Craig had shown up for me a million times. She goes on with more specifics, but Duffy doesn't hear it because he sees in the distance Maya and Cash walking back to their tables together, and it finally dawns on him that maybe what, maybe the letter wasn't for him.
Can Captain Obvious come out and smack him and be like, Maya doesn't love you, Duffy?
That would be amazing.
I'm Captain Obvious.
Ainsley says a few more touching things and tells Craig and Zara that she wishes them a lifetime of happiness. Craig is elated and hugs Ainsley before she hands the mic back to Duffy.
So what did you hate about that that pisses you off?
So this gets into your section a little bit, but
oh, got you.
His speech is ostensibly about love and like missed opportunities and about like love coming together. He can do his fucking speech for the most part.
Oh, without the reveal that he's still in love with. Well, let's get into it.
Yes.
But we don't hear any of that. We don't hear any of what Corinne said, because although he initially started with that, Duffy is flustered and silent, then stumbles through the first sentences of about love and friendship and missed something, then is silent again, and finally, at a loss, says, how about we open the floor for questions? When no one bites, he mutters, give it up for Craig and Zara. I'm glad things worked out for you too, and rushes off. Craig looks pissed, but the director rushes out and announces, that sucked, we'll just cut it in post. The reception resumes. Craig, Zara, and Ainsley are having a great time cutting a rug when Cash comes over to say goodnight. Zara laughs at him, saying, you're the first person to say bye. All my other friends have been carried out with possible alcohol poisoning. Cash tentatively greets his ex, Ainsley, saying, it's really good to see you. She smirks good-naturedly and says, I had to. I wanted to see what the end of a wedding was like.
That's a perfect retort.
Sick burn, girl. Sick, yes. Oh, gosh. Girl, They part ways, and as Cash is gathering up his posse to leave, Ainsley goes to the bar for a shot of tequila, where she's met by Garrett, who sees her coveralls and asks, nice outfit, did you have to valet your tractor? Ainsley says she knows she looks like a Beverly Hills hillbilly, but she don't care. Garrett is a little sloshed and admits that to her that he struck out with every woman at the party. As he proclaims this, he accidentally spills wine all down his shirt and takes it off to dry himself. And he's got a ridiculous six-pack, more like a seven-pack. And Ainsley chuckles, remembering Maya encouraging her to get back out there. She asks Garrett sultrily, you want to get out of here? And he gets offended because he thinks she's telling him to get lost. Until she clarifies, no, do you want to go back to my place for sex? He hesitates and she urges, shake a leg before I change my mind. And he is 1,000% on board. And they both hurry towards the exit.
There's something to be said about getting a man under you to get over a man.
And this next part I cut, which was Duffy and Gemma talking while he smokes a cigarette outside, even though there's an exceptional line where Gemma says he looks like Sandy from Grease when he smokes. Back to you, Corinne.
A short while later, Cash, Fatima, and Nani are dropping off Bashir, who very sweetly says, "It's been a blast hanging out with you two these past few months. Imagine how much fun we'll have on your honeymoon." He exits the vehicle and Fatima's face falls as she watches him leave. Cash notices, and when he asks her what's wrong, her eyes start tearing up and she struggles to get the words out. Nani is either legitimately asleep in the back seat or fake asleep in the back seat. Mm-hmm. She apologizes. "I'm sorry, I don't want to hurt you or your father or Asif, who's already added me on Instagram, but I don't think this is going to work." Cash is dumbfounded because he thought she was having fun. She admits, "I was. I've really enjoyed our time together, but it's not because of you. Honestly, you're a bit moody. I complain a lot about your job, like a lot. I've come to the realization that the real reason that I look forward to our time together is because I get to see Bash, and I think I have feelings for him." Cash is dumbstruck. While back at the ceremony, Maya sees Duffy leaving and greets him happily before asking, "What happened to your toast? It was a hot mess." Duffy relays, "I had a whole speech planned out about love and second chances, which totally fits Maya, Zreg's story. Love and second chances. Hello?"
Yes, see, but when the focus comes off of Duffy, he loses him. It's not about me. What happened?
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
Pathetic. Yes.
There we go again. Yes, that word. Yes.
He's a baby man. He's a baby man. Yeah. Making me break out the baby man song. It's all your fault, Duffy. It's all your fault. Duffy continues. "And then I was going to use it as a romantic gesture towards you. Not what you're supposed to do at somebody else's wedding. However," he says, "I figured it out. You're in love with Cash." Maya's face falls and she tries to deny it, but he tells her, "Cut the crap. I found the letter and we're done for good." He begins walking away and Maya calls out, "Duffy, nothing happened. Please don't say anything." And he slowly turns before saying, "I'd never hurt Ainsley like that." Mike dropped. Maya calls after him, but he is out. And so are we, because that's the end of the episode. Ba-bow!
Okay, I just have one thing to say that did chap my eye a little bit on that last little section, is that Duffy's like, "I am done for good." But weren't you done for good the first time around? Like, Maya was under the impression that you were done for good the first time around, and now you come back and be like, "But I wasn't done, but I'm done now." I'd be like, okay. I mean, neither here nor there.
You see, Tamara, it's all her fault because she wrote a letter professing her love for him. So she led him on.
No, it was a secret letter that she wasn't allowed to throw away and accidentally left it in the jacket, which Duffy just took and ran for the hills.
Left it there on purpose as a sign for him.
Jesus. Pathetic, Corinne, pathetic.
Speaking of pathetic, let's do our relationships rundown.
Okay.
So, Maya and Duffy.
Lord have mercy on me. It's a one for me, folks, because
yes.
of what I just said, that Duffy's pathetic, that he is wrapping all of his love around Maya and not being completely honest, because he's like, "We can still be friends." And she was friends and she left it at that. And then he put this whole complicated bullshit scenario onto her that wasn't true. And then when he found out it wasn't true, he's punishing her for it. Good friend. Real, real good friend.
Yeah. And also, it's not like Maya has acted on her Cash feelings, that she wasn't sending him that letter like, "You bitter Betty." No. Fuck right off, Duffy. One dry kiss. Agreed.
She hasn't cashed out on her feelings for Cash.
So let's move on to Cash and Maya.
I want to do something happier. I want to do Bashir and Fatima, because I was so thrilled when this revelation came through, because I was like, I don't know about Fatima and Cash.
Yeah.
Like, they are lukewarm at best, but maybe it's because they've just met and they're having this arranged marriage thing and their chaperones are all around them, so they can't be intimate or close. But then that fucking section on the dance floor, which I wrote verbatim because it was so goddamn sweet.
Yeah.
I was like, yes! Yes, and it's a mega happy ending, because Cash is like, ah, shit, okay. Like, so it's not like, honestly can't remember how this series ended because I watched it so long ago, but I can't see how Maya and Cash can have some sort of relationship without hurting Ainsley slightly. But Bash and Fatima, I think they're clear. They're in the good. And I have high hopes, and I'm giving them 4.5 dry kisses because I want good things for them both.
Oh, 5 dry kisses all the way for the both of them. Love it. And although I will say that, you know, Cash hadn't even held Fatima's hand. The only thing that he's done is brushed a cannoli crumb off of her face. And Bash, man, he was all up on her all sexy times with the holding of the hands and the slowdown. I mean, like, woo! Scandalous.
No, you can't say it like
scandalous.
That. You sound like he's like grinding up on her like, hey, I don't see nothing wrong with a little bump and grind. And he wasn't. He was perfectly respectable.
Oh, yeah,
they had
he
a
was.
Pineapple between them. They were dancing fine.
No, they even when they were touching hands when they were dancing, which wasn't proper according to the protocol, they were still being very like chaste.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
100%.
Yes.
And appropriate. And another thing I really like about the whole thing is that Fatima, as soon as she realizes what is in her heart, she communicates to Cash about it.
Oh, Maya, are you taking notes? She actually tells him instead of writing a letter and throwing it into the river, which doesn't seem to be working for you, honey. I'm just saying.
Maybe there's a better way to communicate than write letters and throw them into the river.
Right.
Tamara, I have some feelings about us in our relationship.
Throw it in the river.
I wrote a letter about it. I threw it in a river. So you don't
Great.
Need it. Yeah. Yeah.
Don't have to tell me
anything. All
has
been communicated.
I'm fine with that. I'm okay. If something goes sideways, the river will let me know.
Tamara.
What? Oh, I couldn't hear with my headphones on. So sorry. Anyways, I don't like this river. I think I'm going to go start walking in the forest.
Okay. Maya and Cash.
Oh, do you want to go first? Because I keep blurting out my feelings first.
Sure. The chemistry between them is palpable, and it's even more palpable in this episode. It's like a 2-dry kiss and a 4-dry kiss all in one, but it's not a 3-dry kiss. Because 3-dry kiss is middle of the road, and there's definitely, like, things happening.
Oh, it's so funny, because I was going to say 3-dry kisses, but now you've talked me out of it. Because they're not up to 4 or 5 yet. There's still some heat generating, but it's still percolating on the back burner. Again, but it's like I have hopes and expectations for them. I just don't want it to end badly, and I'm really afraid it's going to end badly.
Yeah.
Like with the best friend situation.
Ainsley's proved to be so, you know, so chill. Just like chill about this whole thing so far.
Oh yeah, just like completely neutral about Cash.
Yeah. And mind you, like, okay, I have feelings about Ainsley and how she is reacting about certain things, like trying to make Craig choose her friendship with her or Cash. Like, I don't think that's cool at all. Mm-hmm. However, I completely understand Ainsley being fucking upset as hell about being broken up with at the altar, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would be such a bitter Betty about that, too. Like, that's not cool.
I think I would probably be like Ainsley a little bit. Like if I came to your house, for example, and my ex was there, and I'd be like, ah, fuck. I'd probably be like a little upset and be like, I'm just not going to be here though. I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm bye.
Yeah.
And it's probably going to take me a while to like just be in that friend group with that other person that's
right.
there. But
100%.
Yeah. And I couldn't be like, Corinne, come on, we're going. You're like, this is my house, though, and I'm throwing this party, so I can't go with you.
Yeah.
Like how she's dragged Maya and Duffy away. I'd be like, you're coming with me. I'm leaving in a huff, and you need to follow me.
I know. She was like, Maya, click, click. I was all, damn, okay. And I also don't think, like, I don't blame her for not wanting to be at a, like, a party or something with Cash. Like, I totally get that.
Yeah.
Okay, next couple.
Craig and Zara, Zreg.
Zreg.
They've made it to the top of the mountain, and the view is tacky.
It's beautifully tacky. Five dry kisses all the way.
Oh, I want to give them five dry kisses because I want them to have the happily ever after they deserve. But I still have a little trepidation towards them and their relationship and all the BS that they're going through. So I'm going to say 4.5. 4.5 dry kisses.
Nice. Nice. Okay. So Duffy and Gemma.
God damn it. Duffy and everyone. Zero dry kisses. I do still sense a little heat between them. Like, she is all up on Duffy's stuff. And I'm like, Gemma, what's wrong with you? Are you hurting? I know your husband just died. Are you looking for a soft body to break your fall? I don't understand this at all.
I really appreciate, though, she's very forward with him. And he needs somebody like that in his life. Like, he has all of these people soft peddling information around
him. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Tabby? Tabby wasn't like that?
Yeah, and we see how long Tabby lasted. Tabby was awesome! We love Tabby!
I know, and she was straightforward and no nonsense with him, and he was just like, I can't make myself love her.
Yes, but he needed somebody like that in his life. Tabby was an excellent counterpart to him. He wasn't an excellent counterpart to her, but she was an excellent counterpart to him.
And then he lost interest. I'm bored. Oh, it's not about me. On to the next.
Agreed. Look, I feel like Gemma and Duffy are an odd couple. And I love that Gemma serves up shit to him. She's just like, she tells it how it is. I appreciate that about her and their relationship.
Yeah. I just don't know if they would be good together long term. I kind of see this as being like sparks are flying, but then in the long run, it turns into a fucking dumpster fire.
Definitely. I mean, like I said, odd couple all the way. Just very different backgrounds, very different everything. And Duffy is pathetic. So there you go.
Oh, yes. There's that. There's definitely
Yeah. Oh, Ainsley and Tony Thrice, Bryce.
I'm lukewarm. Right now, very lukewarm, like, it's sad because I know that you can see the love story percolating in the background, but it feels like it's in the background, like right now. Sorry, I don't really care about it.
Agree. And also, I do like that he read her for not going to the wedding and pointed some shit out to her. Sort of Gemma Duffy dynamic in reverse.
Yes. Yes. And I appreciate that. But like, to me at this moment in time, like, he could just be a client that gave her good advice and then disappear.
No, I completely agree with you. Two dry kisses.
Yeah. So not invested in them yet. .. yet. So I agree. The two dry kisses is a fitting rating.
Yes. All right. So, Tam, what do we have coming up next week?
Well, it's going to shock you, Corinne. But we have more for Weddings and a Funeral parts. Seven.
And if you have anything that you would like to say about relationship dynamics or Duffy and me and my lack of empathy towards him, you can reach out via email on onedrykiss@gmail.com or on Instagram or Twitter, all at onedrykiss.
And as always, if you can find the time to rate and review us, we'll promise to never use the word pathetic again. If you leave, I'm putting it out there, Corinne. I'm going to say if somebody gives us a rating and review, or one or both, that we are just going to stop. We're taking the word pathetic out of our vocabulary.
Unless you tell us in the review to keep on using the word pathetic.
Pathetic with a capital P. Anyways, but we love it if you could find the time to do that. But in the meantime, we really thank you for stopping by and sticking with us. We thank you for stopping by, and we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Yeah. See you next time.
See you next time.
record take two.
Who's frozen now?
Oh,
with her hand in front of her face.
Raising up a little bit.
Yeah.
You're frozen.
No, you're frozen.
You're frozen. You're frozen.
Yeah!